Is that me? All right. I didn't realize Tom was doing no intro whatsoever.
What? I followed what Adam told me. He said, "Don't you say."
Tom. I didn't realize it wasn't gonna be like.
You shut your dirty mouth, Tom.
I
just shut it.
I just thought you were gonna do the whole big old thing.
People love comedy.
All right, guys. Welcome to MTG Potpourri. Before we get to the meat of the show, wanted to quickly call out the medical fundraiser for Mariah, who, as I'm sure many people have already heard, was in a pretty bad accident recently. She's a member of the Magic community, the streaming community. Her and her father, they have a website set up for donations to pay for medical bills, as well as changes to the type of lifestyle she's going to have to live from now on. And if you go check out the website, it'll have details on how you can donate, as well as, you know, obviously the entire situation if you're interested in reading about it. But the Magic community is banding together pretty well right now for this situation. And if you haven't heard about it, check out the link, and your support is appreciated.
Yeah, Adam was kind of telling us a lot about this, where the people aren't aware if they don't know somebody who has to modify their home to make it more accessible, and things like cars and vans, the cost is just incredible. So any help would be amazing.
Now, Adam, that's coming from a real doctor.
Yeah, and those
real veterinarian.
Yes, you know, it's hard to modify those for dogs to drive cars. It's really, really hard.
We're back.
Yeah, we are back, and this could be very special, damn it, for you, Adam. This is MTG Potpourri episode number 10. I'm just gonna say it again because it just feels wrong not to say it every single time.
Hey Tom, you know how special this feels? Every episode feels like my first time.
What?
That's how special it is.
You're a father now. You can't be talking like that. You just had a little kid. He's like you.
Maybe it's the first time he had a Hot Pocket. He didn't say what it was. Because that's the first time you have that
dirty
bad of diarrhea.
Filthy, Conley. You're just filthy. That's awful. My first time podcasting. What's wrong with you?
All right.
I do have to call it, just to support, I think, Conley's reading of that is Adam did just email me before the podcast saying, "I am in you," then apostrophe, like in parentheses, "your phone call." So that was a little out there. I was hoping for stunned silence. That's why I said it.
You got it.
Congratulations. Okay. Well, guys, you might say I have a conspiracy to ruin this podcast and take it directly off rails because we have a new site, a set out called Conspiracy. And unfortunately, I don't know if I'm ever going to really be able to fully experience the set. I'm going to have to live vicariously through other people because Conley and Adam, this may not be you guys, but there are probably a lot of players that can't get together with that many people for a draft.
Yeah, Tom just doesn't have three friends. So
no, if I had, if he had a dime for every friend, I'd have.
Once you teach the children to play, you'll be good though.
Yeah, unfortunately, I would have to buy some boxes, then set them somewhere for about 7 years, which is a long time to not bust them from some packs.
Whatever it takes. I personally, I think this is more of an Adams thing because, like, I personally probably won't play much Conspiracy. If I do, it'll be on Magic Online. Is it even a Magic Online thing? I don't even know if it is.
I'll assume it's a Magic Online thing.
Yeah, no, well, Magic Online?
So Conspiracy, just to bring, I guess, both of you up to speed from the Stone Age of Magic sets, is a, you know, it changes the draft environment.
It was a freaking week ago. Give me a break.
there are cards in the set that affect the draft. Like, you know, you draft it face up so people know, and then you turn it down and you get some effect. So obviously the Magic Online client, you know, it's a very unhinged, unglued type effect, but it's easy to do in person, but like the implementation is something I guess they that really just isn't feasible, you know, given the current client situation and everything. So what they did is in Vintage Masters, which we'll get to a little bit after this, that comes out next week at the end of this week, I guess, because this goes up Monday, it'll come up the end of this week, a week after Conspiracy. It has some Conspiracy cards in it. So like the relevant new legends and the relevant Will of the Council, the multiplayer voting spells, so some of those do come over, but not the actual draft experience. Kind of like what it would be like in person won't be there.
Okay. So Adam, Kyle, it sounds like you have not done a draft with this yet. Adam, I know you had posted, I think on your Facebook, maybe even Twitter, that you got some and you were hoping to draft soon.
Uh, False. That was not me. I'm anxiously waiting. We're recording this on a Thursday. I am going to my local game store when it opens.
Yeah, I want to try to get this. They start selling it at midnight tonight, Tom.
Oh, I thought it already. I thought it came out today.
No,
but if you're in Japan, it did.
You just moved to New Zealand. Everything comes out first in New Zealand.
Yeah, exactly. But no, this set's awesome. And the reason this set's awesome is because it's if you don't play Commander, you kind of feel like the big Commander multiplayer sets just aren't your bag. You know, if you don't play casual 60 card, kind of like just loosey goosey, whatever goes Magic, like things like Plane Chase or Arch Enemy don't really excite you. But this is one of the very first ways that Wizards has really come out and said, look, we've got multiplayer, but by the way, we kind of know there's this cube thing too, because there's this huge overlap, you know, and I know, Conley, you've drafted a ton of cubes over the years. These cards that affect the draft are, some of them are pretty powerful, and they let you do some really cool things that weren't, you know, that were kind of impossible before, you know, getting to peek at unopened booster packs, getting to take a whole pack. I mean, Agent of Acquisitions is this, basically it's this card that you can draft, and when you turn it face down, you just like take the whole pack where you're at in drafting. And I think I think anyone who's done a cube draft knows exactly that feeling of looking at a pack and going, I just want all of these cards and I'm happy. And now it can actually happen for you.
Yeah, I mean, the artifacts in the set, all the, I guess it'd be sort of the cog work and their construct creatures are pretty crazy for how they affect drafts. I mean, do you think I feel like in some ways this is, like you said, more to a casual player. Do you think this is a little tough that there might be some really newer players that might try this and would maybe get really confused by what's going on during a draft when people are holding on to packs and all types of nutty stuff is happening?
Well, I think, I mean, obviously, yeah. I mean, you know, if you've never drafted before and now you're going to draft a set that messes with drafting, yes, it's going to be chaos. But, you know, anybody who's unfamiliar with sealed or draft, you know, it is a difficult thing to learn on the fly. But I think the fact that this isn't standard legal, there doesn't seem to be a lot of overlap with like standard. The biggest overlap seems to be a lot with mostly legacy cards, like Misdirections in here and, you know, a bunch of cards that are really for Eternal formats. I think it's going to be skewed towards players like me and even you, Tom, that have drafted before, that are looking for a unique experience, that want to get some interesting cards they're gonna use in other games. You know, hopefully open something really cool and powerful and valuable, but you know, it's not for the average FNM Saturday night, you know, Magic player. In fact, it can't even be sanctioned for a typical draft. It's only just a casual event. So like they can't run, a store won't run an FNM and you can't like make this happen as like your Friday night draft.
Yeah. I think the card, I think that to me that seems to break this the most in a really good way is Deal Broker. It's the three colors. It's 2/3. You draft it face up. This is immediately after the draft. You may reveal a card in your card pool and each other player may offer you basically to trade. And to me, this in kind of a cool way, one of the reasons sometimes I have disliked draft is a potentially a part of the night. There's really just eight of you sitting there not talking at all because, you know, you're not supposed to be giving information, you know, if you're trying to be legit. This totally breaks that. Where now people are actually be like, hey, you have an idea of what they've drafted. It really reveals a lot of extra information. To me, it just adds a cool dynamic that people can bartering for your car.
It's kind of a nostalgic throwback, too, because I remember early on in my drafting days when nobody knew what the hell they were doing, people would always, right after the draft, try to trade cards. Like, you'd go over and you'd be like, okay, I have, like, these two sweet green first picks. Do you have any, like, boomerangs for me? And obviously it was illegal or whatever, but nobody knew. Yeah, regarding my take on the set, I mean, the set is certainly not really for me. I might play it a couple times over the years and have some fun with it. I certainly like playing Magic for fun. But it kind of comes at an awkward time, I think. The time between Journey to Nyx and M15 is not very long. As a matter of fact, we have three Pro Tours in a span of 5 months, basically, just because set releases are so close together. So having kind of this gigantic influx of cards in the middle of like two busy periods for me doesn't really give me the opportunity to kind of sit back and enjoy a fun only type of set like this. And it's not on Magic Online, which means no easy access. Okay. But yeah, I think that the set's awesome. I think that there's a lot of cool reprints, which are always good. Lowering the price on some of those super expensive cards, you know, like Misdirection being really expensive for no reason doesn't make a lot of sense, etc. And I believe most of the set, aside from the ones that affect draft and stuff like that, most of the set will be Eternal legal, correct, Adam?
Yep. Yeah, the only cards that are not legal are the conspiracy cards, the one where if you starts in the command zone, it's basically like a commander type function where it starts in the command zone and it affects the game. So like you starts in the command zone, you name a creature and your opponent doesn't know what it is, but you can reveal it and all of your creatures are like birds of paradise, or they all have, all those creatures have with that name have haste. It just kind of affects the games dynamically.
So all the card like Deal Broker or whatever that has a bunch of draft relevant text, you can play that in Legacy and just ignore all that basically.
Right, because it's not affecting anything in the draft.
Sure.
So do you guys feel, this is something I feel they potentially could add a little bit of extra flavor is, it seems like it's, when I read through the whole spoiler, there's no cards in the set that directly impact conspiracies themselves. It's only conspiracies affect creatures that are in play or coming into play. So it feels like it could have been a fun deck if there's a creature set that got +1/+1 for every conspiracy you have. So then there might be some kind of crazy decks where people are trying to draft as many conspiracy cards as possible. They have like 20 cards sitting in front of them in their command zone at the start of a game.
Yeah,
you'd probably not have a legal deck at that point in time.
That's a good point. Well, there's the ones that make it so you can have 5 less cards in your deck. So if you have multiples of those. And also, yeah, it felt like there's...
That's a rare, so I wouldn't count on seeing that or even seeing that in multiples. I mean, that's like the spikiest of spike conspiracies there is. Like, oh, I can make my deck even better by having less cards? Sign me up.
Yeah, most players want to play with more cards.
Casual. Yeah, I mean, I think I think it would be fair to say that, you know, given that it's their first time with a new card type, that they would kind of take it easy and they wouldn't overextend into it and kind of make all these complicated conspiracy interactions. I mean, conspiracy is already extremely complex. It's a new card type in a zone that typically doesn't matter in a limited environment, having a major effect on the game. Oh, and it's hidden information that can be revealed like a morph at any time. That's a serious complexity line.
But that's why it should be in casual, where people don't give a crap about layers and stuff. They're like, whatever.
You still got to understand the game.
To a point. You only have to know so much to have fun.
I would suspect that if conspiracy and the draft and everything feels really good and people really liked it and they're like, hey, I'd love to do this again, that it would not surprise me if there were more conspiracies later and things that would let you, you know, for example, turn a conspiracy face down again and change, like, you know, name a different creature or things like that. You know, they may play with it down the road. But given that conspiracies are only relevant when you draft them in the format, any card that, you know, any card that, that says, you know, do something with a conspiracy is just going to be dead. And, you know, 99% of the Magic games, you know, that's played in.
And the one combo I think that I would love to pull off, and I think it's doable, is, as Agent of Acquisitions, this is the 2 colorless, it's a creature construct, uncommon. Of course, you draft it face up. Instead of drafting a card from a booster pack, you may draft each card in that booster pack one at a time. So basically, you burn through the pack, and then you're out of the round for the rest of that.
But you get to look at the pack still as they come past.
Exactly. But I think that would be a fantastic and kind of fun combo with Lurking Automaton. This is the artifact creature construct. It's a common. It's 5 colorless. Reveal it as you draft it, and note how many cards you've drafted this draft round, including it. And it enters the battlefield with X +1/+1 counters, where X is the highest number you noted. So it seems like fun. If you actually open one of these Agent of Acquisitions and you have a Lurking Automaton in the pack, you can just first pick that one, then you draft 13 cards, and then you pick your Lurking Automaton last. That would be kind of fun.
That's it. Tom broke the format.
This card just seemed to be really interesting. And also, too, if you didn't have the Agent Acquisitions, it's sort of a weird yin-yang if this is in the pack. You know, at what point do people say, hey, I am not going to draft this damn or pass it on any longer because it's going to be an 8-8 for 5 or something like that.
All right, Tom. Well, since you want to throw out that combo, let me give them...
I just want to interject before you do that, Conley. So just so everyone's aware, that cannot happen. You cannot open two of the... As far as I'm aware, you cannot open two of the draft affecting cards. All of the cards that affect the draft, all of the the agents of acquisition and that slot is replacing the basic land that's typically in a pack. So these are 15 card packs, but you'll never open two. You won't open both of those cards together in a pack.
Oh,
now, you could be past it. So you draft that first face up, and then the person could pass you lurking automaton, and you can do it. But it's going to take two steps to have that happen. So just
So just the way they actually collated the packs, there's never going to be more than one of these in a pack.
Correct.
Oh, okay. Interesting. I guess I did not get that from the draft page. That's good to know.
Yeah, that was that's kind of hidden. It was something Sam Stoddard, one of the developers in R&D, shared on Twitter.
But even more fun then, because if you got your acquisitions thing there, people would be like, dang it, do I draft the stupid lurking automaton now before I pass it to Tom and he takes my otherwise crappy pack so he can get his 10-10 lurking automaton? And hopefully the answer is yes.
All right, so here's your other combo. This one's legit. So World Knit.
Screw you, buddy.
With that.
What was that?
World Knit is a conspiracy that.
That's my second card that I want to mention.
You have to, as long as every card in your card pool started the game in your library or in the command zone, lands you control have tap, add one mana of any color to your mana pool. So basically what this encourages is it encourages kind of like the Magic Online no submit button, sort of, where you end up playing every single card you draft, and as a result you get perfect mana and you just have to play a bunch of weird cards. That's kind of fun, and you could just do that. However, you can also combo this with Cogwork Grinder.
Is this the guy that gets rid of cards?
Yeah, he's a six colorless 0/0, and as you draft a card, so you draft him face up, and as you draft a card, you may remove it from the draft face down. That those cards aren't in your card pool. It specifically says that. And then he comes into play with X +1/+1 counters, where X is the number of cards you exile this way. So with him in your pool and the other guy in your pool, both of which are rare, so you do have to get them, you basically don't have to play a wacky deck, and you get this guy's a gigantic, whatever size he is, but you don't have to play any bad cards. You just get to play a solid deck with five color mana, which is pretty sweet.
And for Adam and Conley, for cards like Cogwork Grinder, if it doesn't specifically say kind of this draft round, would say I got Cogwork Grinder in my first round, would this then sit there and I could actually do this for either the second or third pack? If it doesn't
I assume so.
That was one thing I got a little confused with some of these, where some would say specifically this draft round and some didn't. I didn't know if that was they left that off or that had a significant meaning to it.
Oh, no. I think this one, if you first pick it pack one, you could get this thing up to a 45-45 for six mana.
Oh, yes. So,
I mean, you would have only it in lands in your deck, of course. But
hey, if I'm a risky player, man, come on. And Kyle, you did mention the other card that just as a sort of a casual, I'm in this draft to have fun. World Knit just seemed fun.
If I draft this format and I see a World Knit, I'm definitely going all in on it. But I don't know. This format does seem like a lot of fun. Like I said, I wish it had been in a more lull of a spot, like maybe a little bit closer to holidays or something, but just so I could experience it more. It does look like fun. But yeah, I will be spending my weekends this weekend PTQing instead.
Yeah, well, and too,
first time in a long time.
It feels like too is that this set, and especially in the conspiracies that are the hidden agendas, where they, as Adam mentioned, they come out face down. I feels like there has to be a lot of trust in your draft groups. Because you're supposed to name this. Let me just read Secret Summoning just as an example. It's a hidden agenda. I think it's uncommon, I think. It says, hidden agenda starts, start the game with this conspiracy face down in the command zone and secretly name a card. So you're supposedly naming the card at the start of the game. You may turn this up at any time and reveal the chosen name. Whenever a creature with the chosen name enters the battle under your control, you may search your library for more of those and put them into your hand. I want to hear from people that when they start drafting this is, I mean, are people writing this on a piece of paper or?
Yeah, of course. That's what I assume even if you're friends with the person, the protocol is going to be you take that card, you put it face down or face up or whatever. Then then you put a piece of paper with a name under it, underneath that. Your opponent's not going to necessarily have any idea what the hell's going on because there's a million of these cards. And then when the event happens, you flip it over with the name, with the piece of paper, and you have your proof.
See, I wish they could have gotten like completely unglued and actually have a little space at the bottom that was like dry erasable, where I could like literally just write it on there with a marker and then wipe it off at the end of the game.
I'm pretty sure. No, never mind. That was gonna be a dumb statement. We'll just...
No, we, like I say dumb statements all the time.
So. I caught myself. Though.
Hey, hey Tom, in cards in cubes that are sleeved, you'll be able to do that because you can just write with dry erase right on the sleeve and then the face of the sleeve and then wipe it off. Cool. So that'll happen, but not in the actual, you know, the fresh pack draft.
Yeah, but these are when you play the actual game, so you could do that then. That's cool. Okay, I like that.
So there is one mechanic that I want to talk just touch on briefly called Will of the Council. It's a it's not a keyword mechanic. It's just a
it's an ability word.
I'm not even saying anything, so I'll get it wrong.
So I'm going to talk about like one of my most favorite cards in the set, Custode Squire. It's a 4 and a white for a 3/3 flying, and Will of the Council. When it enters the battlefield, starting with you, each player votes for an artifact, creature, or enchantment card in your graveyard. Return each card with the most votes or tied for the most votes to your hand. So in a multiplayer game, basically you play this and you vote for something, and if like, you know, you haven't really made everyone mad, they'll probably let you have it, or if like they conspire against you and give you some, you know, give you a less effective card, you still get something back from the graveyard. But what makes Will of the Council interesting is how it handles ties. So typically when you're dealing with like 3 players or 4 players, you know, ties probably won't happen that often because there's incentive to choose whatever is most advantageous for you, which may or may not line up with what's most advantageous for the player playing the Will of the Council card. But all the cards that tie, like with Custode Squire, in a 2-player game, basically you're always going to get what you want. So if I play, you know, and I'm playing you heads up, Tom, I can put in my Pauper Cube and play it and name a creature or an artifact, you know, the like Bone Splitter. I'm going to get my Bone Splitter back. Whether you pick Bone Splitter or something else, I'm going to get that Bone Splitter back. If you pick something else, I'm going to get that back too. So basically I force you to give me what I want. And that's why a couple Will of the Council cards made into Vintage Masters. There's just this really cool, like, I think it's really clever because it's one of those mechanics that in multiplayer, it's going to play out a little different. And like, you know, maybe you get call in some favors or try to get people to do what you want, or you think you know what they're going to do. But in a duel, like it does, you know, it does exactly what it does. And it's not this weird card that's not going to be, you know, you have no idea what you're going to get out of it. It just does its thing. Even though it's still really complex.
Well, I agree. It's sort of a neat balance of making it sort of a cool card for these big multiplayer games, but actually still potentially making it a powerful card in other formats. At first, I didn't go ahead.
I thought you were done with your point. You could finish your point because mine is completely.
Oh, my point is the pointiest of points. And basically, I was just saying that. But I just say, I thought that was kind of a cool way. Otherwise, if I'm looking from a duel, just 1-on-1. I guess to me, the cards seem really unexciting. Literally, it feels like it's a come into play ability. But I like that it's just the way it's worded, that it can exist in both universes and be happy. Okay, my point is now dulled to you, Conley.
All right, all I was going to say is I was getting infuriated with Adam's pronunciation of the word custody, I thought, over and over again. He just kept butchering this word custody and saying a stupid, awful way to pronounce it. And I was going to call him out for it. And then I scrolled up my page to the card just to verify, and sure enough, it's not custody. It's some stupid word that's just like custody.
No, it's custody.
It's custody. They just took the Y, made it an I, and then you have this dumb word that looks like custody.
Yeah, custody. Anyway, is dad.
Will,
I love you too, Conley.
Will of the Council is a pretty sweet mechanic. I think some of my favorite cards from the set have that on it. What is the black one's really cool? Well, first of all, there's the Grudge Keeper. I think it's just a sweet design all around. So it's a colorless and a black 2/1. Whenever players finish voting, each opponent who voted for a choice you didn't loses 2 life. So it has this really interesting dynamic where if you're the first person to vote, then other people can choose whether to fall in line with you or not based on the 2 life, if that matters to them. Where if you're last in the vote, you kind of have this like, you know, kill them or not. You could just like, you know, spite people and just deal a bunch of damage, or you can, you know, vote with the way you want to make the Will of the Council vote go in the direction that you're hoping it goes. So I think like cards like that are really interesting when it comes to these politics, because now aside from, you know, just those players being interested in the vote for the direct output of the card that people are voting on, there are going to be small political ways to skew it, the game. There's also, like, you know, there's a white guy that gives you two votes. You personally, you just get two votes, and you can vote differently with them if you want, even. So if you play that, and then you play Custody, what's his last name? Custody
Squire.
Squire. And if you play the guy that gives you two votes, and you vote for artifact and creature, and after somebody voted for enchantment or whatever, you'll get all three back now, just with you and one other player voting. So you, even in two-player games, you can technically, like, you know, make a weird way about that. I don't know. I think it's interesting.
Did you guys, were you interested at all in sort of the cycle they have in the set where each color has a, usually kind of like a five casting cost creature that gets a number of counters based on something in all players, either graveyards or in play, and then they have a mana ability to remove those to do an ability? Do you feel like those are really strong in multiplayer games? For example, Drake's Town Forgotten. It's the black one. It's four and a black. It's a rare. It enters the battlefield with X plus one counters, where X is the number of creature cards in all graveyards. And then two and a black, you remove a counter, and you give a creature minus one. I mean, they're all rare.
Are you talking
rares.
About them for actual Constructed or for...
This would be like in limited. In the limited, the conspiracy draft world.
Oh, these guys should be pretty strong in limited, just because all their abilities, I think all their abilities do not require tapping. Am I wrong there?
I believe all of them are, yeah, just a mana ability. You know,
yeah, so calling. They're all kind of late game cards. Like, they have mana cost associated with them, but they're like, I think like the red one's seven, I believe. And you get
blue is
you
four.
Get,
yeah.
Yeah. The red one's seven. You get counters equal to the number of tapped lands on the battlefield. So that one's kind of interesting. And then you turn lands into, you cough lands. Basically you turn them into 4/4 elementals. The green one, do you know what the blue one does, Tom?
Go ahead. Blue one is it's for number of instants and sorceries in all graveyards, and then the ability is remove a counter that you can draw a card and then discard. So basically, and you merfolk loot yourself.
And that one costs four. The green one is six mana, checks total number of cards in all players' land in all players' hands, and then searches for lands and puts them into your hand. That's kind of bad. That's really bad.
I need lands.
Yeah, well, it's a six mana guy, and he draws you lands. What is that? That's poopy.
Hey, I'd rather have Hydra Omnivore at that point.
So the green one aside, the green one, I guess, is pretty bad. He's a six mana guy that checks your cards in hand. The white one, just to round up the cycle, checks the number of creatures on the battlefield, other creatures, and then you put 1/1 white spirits into play. So he costs four. So I think all these guys are actually pretty strong. The green one's easily the worst in limited because he's going to come down as like a 4/4, 5/5 sometimes for six mana, which is already poopy. And then his abilities, like the double poops, like it's not good. But the rest of these guys, the red one's really solid. The white one's solid. The blue one's really solid. And the black one's good just because like they're going to be gigantic and they have relevant abilities you can spam over and over as the game goes along. And I think given that this is a casual format, like, I think games are going to go kind of long. There is some aggressive cards, but people like to do their sweet stuff in casual type formats like this. So I would expect people to, you know, have fun with it.
Do you feel like Dethrone, though, is going to actually speed up games? Supposedly that's, you know, Dethrone's where if they attack the player at the highest life, they get a +1/+1 counter. Do you feel like that's actually going to speed up games or not so much?
I mean, it'll speed up two-player games. I don't think it'll speed up multiplayer games that much.
Because this is designed to be played with, like, 3 to 4 people. 3 to 4 player multiplayer games was, you know, that's how the actual page tells you to play this.
Sure.
So it sounds like you don't think that the Dethrone Netha is going to do much in a multiplayer game.
No. I mean, it's a solid ability that people will use. I don't think it's not like Bloodthirst or something where it warps the format to become an aggressive format because that mechanic exists. I think it will allow people to draft aggressive decks, which are things that generally don't happen in multiplayer games. So it'll give people that outlet, but I don't think it'll like dominate the format. I think it'll be one of the cool things you can do, and drafting an aggressive deck will be possible because they exist.
So I can just attack with all my Pillarfield Oxes and win.
Yes.
I really hope they have new art on that.
Or you could just attack with Hydra Omnivore.
That thing is sweet. That really throws off the... So if Hydra Omnivore, yeah, people aren't aware, it's a 6 mana for an 8/8. And interestingly is, whenever it deals combat damage to an opponent, it deals that much damage to each other opponent. So then it really adds to that dynamic of, do I protect the weak player because I don't want to get nailed for 8 every time? That seemed really interesting. It's a mythic, though, so you may not see it very often. But that is a cool Hydra.
Yeah, and that's a reprint from one of the Commander sets.
But it feels like this, it seems to fit so much better in the Conspiracy universe to me. Because there are all these other cards, too, that are affecting, you know, supposedly meant to be played in multiplayer games. Commander, I say, often is, but it feels like there's been a shift more to, I guess, one-on-one Commander, where this seems to fit well, and hopefully you are playing this in a 3-to-4-player game every time.
Yeah. Also, I didn't realize it was a reprint because I don't pay attention to those Commander sets because I haven't played Legacy in a while, so don't care.
So I gotta... Yeah, you're good. All right, anything else about Conspiracy? It seems like a cool set. I would love to play some drafts with this. I just don't know if it's going to happen.
Well, you don't have friends. We already discussed this.
Yeah, I know. It's a sad place to be. In the,
you should go back. You should go back to keeping your co-host in your basement. Maybe that'll help.
It's been a long time since I've done that. All right, guys. All right. Let's see. Vintage Masters. This, I don't know if it's really aimed for me, but I'm assuming you guys will have some strong thoughts. I would love to hear your speculation on what the potential prices will be for the special rarity cards. And I'll let Adam or Conley explain what the hell that is. Because we need another fucking rarity. That's what we need in this game.
Right. So if you're not familiar with Vintage Masters, basically it's the set that was designed, the limited for sale digital booster packs for, you know, for draft, for events online, designed to finally bring the Power 9 online. That's the Black Lotus, all the Moxen, everything that's already been in the cube a couple times and made the Power Cube kind of exciting. Well, you know, you can actually have those cards in your account and you can play, you know, constructed Vintage online with them. So obviously, you know, are those cards mythic? You know, basically, long story short, you know, Wizards did their math, and this is Eric Lauer, who's very good at doing this Wizardy booster pack math, basically figured out that they needed a higher rarity just for these specific 9 cards, just so that way, you know, that they maintained that really elusive, exclusive value that you expect from it. So basically like one in like every 120 packs, 121 packs. I'm trying to remember the exact number off the top of my head. I don't know, but basically it's like a super mythic, for lack of a better term. And it's just really, really rare. And mind you, in constructed Vintage, you only need one of these. So these are never something you need a play set of unless you're doing some really gross things on unsanctioned freeform constructed. But, you know, it's special.
And also, there are foil premium versions of these as well, just so people are aware.
Yeah, and those are the most special. Those you could literally sell for a kilo of cocaine.
Probably. That's a lot of cocaine.
It is. I mean, I don't know how much these are going to be, but they're going to be absurd. Like, Force of Will has hovered around like 200 tickets for a while, and those are going to see way more print than these cards are. Like, I don't know. These are going to be... I would not be surprised if one or more of the cards hit 4 digits in tickets.
The foil, like Ancestral Recall, something that is...
Well, foil, nice. I didn't even consider foils, yeah. Then there's definitely going to be 4 digits associated with some of these foils. Like, foil Black Lotus will probably be 4 digits in tickets.
So it's kind of crazy that theoretically they can digitally reprint these cards, and I feel like sometimes sort of through a rarity trick, are potentially making them worth more than the actual real-life paper cards that they're based on, which seems kind of wild.
Potentially, but at the same time, Classic is not as participative a format as Vintage, even though I think Vintage is, like, it kind of sucks, because Vintage is a very awesome format, but its card availability is basically killing the format. It's been choking it out for a while now. Like, when I got into the format, I had real cards and played kind of like budget decks as a result, because I didn't have Moxes and stuff. And as I earned them, that was cool, but they started to allow proxies a lot of the time, like 15 proxy tournaments, 10 proxy tournaments. And those tournaments were very fun, very level playing field for the most part. You still had to acquire, you know, your dual lands and your Bazaar Baghdad sometimes, whatever mid-tier cards. And it was still very difficult and still had that kind of that awesome Magic feel to it, even though we were playing with proxies. But naturally, WotC is not allowed to kind of endorse that because it basically says, hey, play with fake versions of our cards for money and stuff. So all of those types of tournaments they happened, but they were not sanctioned because you're not allowed to sanction a proxy tournament. So without people kind of doing sanctioned things, seeing their ratings escalate, things like that, and the whole idea of playing with proxies kind of being a tainted concept, like people, you know, just don't want to do it. It's kind of a dirty thing. With that happening and then card availability just dropping dramatically over the years with, you know, cards being ruined or being graded and not being put on the market anymore, or, you know, just people holding on to them. It's just a format that's just been choked out, even though it's really, really fun. Classic has not been vintage because it hasn't had these cards in it. Now, once these cards are out, will we have a true vintage in on Modo? I'm not too sure. It depends on how many of these cards actually see print, because if you can't get multiple hundreds of people or thousands of people playing the format, it's not going to really thrive. So if there's not at least, you know, 1,000 of each of these, then it's going to be difficult to see vintage really take off on Magic Online. But, you know, 1,000 doesn't sound like the most unreasonable number of these to have out there. Maybe it'll be less, but I don't know. We'll have to see.
And just to kind of address kind of before about how often you might see one of these Power 9 cards in a pack, is I pulled up Trick Jarrett's kind of article from May 12th. He said about once in every 53 packs, you would open a Power 9 card. That's not a specific one, but one of those Power 9.
So it's like one a booster and a half, basically.
Yeah, it's a specific Power 9 card is about twice as rare as a specific Mythic rare. And it mentions nothing about how rare the foil versions of these are. I guess that's what I don't know for the other, like, other rarities. How much more rare is a foil version versus the non-foil? I mean, are they twice as rare? Is that always what it is? Or I guess I honestly don't know.
We've looked this up before. I don't know off the top of my head, but I believe it's more than that. I don't know the exact rarity. I think it's like, because basically you get a foil one out of like 10 packs or something. I don't know. They have something on the back of your pack. So you break it down to, you basically just ratio the entire set over in rarities, because the rate of getting a foil is the same rate as that rarity would appear in a pack. So you get a foil common significantly more often than you get a foil uncommon, and more than you get a foil rare, et cetera. So okay. You basically just take the, you get a foil in this many packs, and you just break that ratio for the entire set. So then a mythic rare becomes X difficult to get. I forget the exact numbers. It's different for every set, of course.
God, this is going to be a wild west, though, of prices. Like the first few days that these packs are out there and people start opening Power 9s and even maybe a few of the foil ones, it's just going to be nuts to see what people are asking for and what they're getting before things stabilize.
I would suggest that if you want to be smart about it, you probably want to hold on to any of this type of stuff you get for a couple days. There is a chance that you could sell whatever you acquired for more than it will end up being worth in those, you know, early kind of up-in-the-air, chaotic days of the draft. But at the same time, I think that if somebody's offering you large amounts of tickets for these things, there's a better chance they know about it more than you do, and they're probably getting it lower than it'll be in the long run. So if you're trying to be smart about it, I would just kind of hold on to it for a couple days, let some prices start to settle down, let a middle ground kind of be reached by sellers and buyers, and then go on the market and get what you actually deserve for it.
I mean, we've talked a lot about the Power 9s. Is there any specific, you know, a handful of reprints you guys are excited or were very excited to see in the Vintage Masters set? There's a lot of cards, but
boy, am I glad you asked, Tom. So, you know, being running my Popper Cube and talking a lot with Alex Ullman and some of the guys in the Popper community, I really don't, the Power 9 really, they're not legal in Commander. Like, none of, like, the super flashy, exciting stuff really excites me about the set. But some of the commons have been downshifted from uncommons. Basically, cards that are more powerful than their rarity would indicate are now at that lower rarity. So, for example, Battle Screech. It's an old Judgment common, 2/2 white, sorcery, put two 1/1 bird tokens onto the battlefield, and you can flash it back by tapping 3 white creatures. So basically you cast it and you have 2/3 of what you need to immediately cast it again. So for my cube, where I have like a red white focus on hyper aggressive and a bunch of token makers, it's not going to be unreasonable to on turn 4 play Battle Screech and then immediately make 2 more bird tokens and put 4 power flying onto the battlefield for 4 mana on turn 4. Just stuff like that. Just Arrogant Worm is a very famous piece of the Blue-Green Madness decks. Basically, you can get a 4/4 trample for 3 mana if you discard it. But its normal casting cost is a fair 5 mana for a 4/4 trample. So that card just goes right into a popper cube easily. It's just a very efficient card and has some corner cases where you can get extra value out of it. So that's what's exciting about me. It's like the themes that they pushed in the different color pairs resulted in a bunch of downshifted uncommons that are now common cards for the popper community.
Now, is this something, has Wizards ever in the past charged more than like what I would call MSRP for a MTGO pack? Like, did they do it? I didn't open any of the previous vintage or, kind of like Modern Masters or anything like that. Is this are these going to be $3.99 or are they going to be more for the packs?
I don't remember.
Oh, I don't know. If you're asking me, I have no idea.
I don't know either. So I was just kind of curious.
Assume they have given that information out, but I am not positive of it.
I will pull it. Again, it seems like we looked so much at the Power 9 stuff, and there's just so much other crazy stuff in this that you mentioned. Force of Will, Mana Drain. There's just so much crazy, kind of drool-worthy cards in this set. But I will pull up their official page since I am curious. So it seems like they could almost do
it's a witchy
charge whatever they want. I pulled up their official set information page. That does not tell me.
The wiki doesn't have the cost of the packs either.
And well, the pre-release events are June 13th to the 16th. So an official release date is
a week
16th.
Away.
Yeah, so it's coming soon. But I was just curious. It seems like they theoretically could charge.
I don't even know if the packs will be available for purchase. Or if you'll have to enter the events to play with them.
Oh, really? That would be interesting.
I mean, if they're doing limited... like,
that'd be a way to control it, though.
Yeah, if the packs are for purchase, you could just like literally buy a million packs if you really wanted to. Not saying they would. Going to the Making of Vintage Masters. Oh, here we go. Pre-release and release events.
It's an MSRP of $6.99. Okay. So it is like Modern Masters, where because you're getting a bunch of... extremely powerful reprints. I mean, let's be clear. It's not just the Power 9, the special rarity. There's also a bunch of really powerful cards that are available at Mythic and Rare. Things like Exploration, Armageddon, a bunch of older cards that typically will, just really cannot be printed in like a modern legal set or a standard legal set. All of the dual lands, I believe, are in the set. Just everything is...
Library of Alexandria, Lake of the Dead. Yeah, there's a lot of Strip Mine because people love playing with Strip Mine because they're all sadists.
And just to give people the breakdown on events, I found those 25 tickets for an 8-4 draft or 4 tickets plus product, which is 21 tickets worth of product and then 4 tickets. So you're paying 25 still, assuming the packs are 7 on the free market. The 4-3-2-2s are the exact same price. Swiss events are the same price. The Swiss sealed queues are 45 tickets or 4 event tickets plus product. Wait, in that case, so this one, if you use the event tickets and product, you actually spend one more ticket. It's 46 tickets worth of product if you use the product, which is kind of weird because you have to use 6 packs, obviously, which is 42 tickets worth of packs, and then 4 tickets on top of that. So you actually pay more there. That's weird. For the 64 player drafts, the one where they do, you win your first draft, then you go to a top 8 draft, and then you draft again. Those are 30 tickets, or 8 tickets plus product. And then there is the premier sealed deck with top 8 for if you win one of those or you want to enter on your own, it's 45 tickets as well. So it looks like sealed is 45, drafts are 25, and then the big drafts are 30, which is certainly a lot more than any normal drafts are Magic Online. Those are 15, basically. But yeah, it's interesting. It's pretty expensive, but I'm sure that people are still going to play them. I know I'll probably do a couple.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't realize Mishra's Workshop was in this set as I looked through the spoiler. That's crazy.
For me, it really comes down to how good the limited format is. Like, I'm going to play a couple drafts, get a feel for if I like playing with the cards, if I think the format's balanced, if there's some sweet things you could do. If it's like playing cube, then I'll probably do 10 of them or whatever at that price and not care. Keep in mind, those are the pre-release and release drafts, so it'll probably go down after that potentially, but I don't know.
All right. Well, a very interesting set. I think maybe a sealed, because I guess for me, I would have a hard time approaching this set and draft. I literally wouldn't know what to do. Having not really done much cube, I would just be confused.
You basically just got to get crazy with it, Tom. You just got to think of whatever the sweetest thing you could, like. You see a card, you see a Mind's Desire, and you go, well, this card's not good because you cast two creatures and then this, and that's all it does. No, when you play a format like this, you cast a Brainstorm into an Ancestral Recall into two Dark Rituals and a blah, blah, blah into Mind's Desire. So, like, it basically all the cool, fun things you always wish you could do in Limited, but you never can, you get to do those.
Okay. Yeah, see, that's tough. I mean, that would be a major mental switch for me. And I think
that's fair.
Yeah. And two, it seems like it's going to be hard to avoid some, you have to draft this card if you see like a Power 9. I mean, it's probably going to be good anyways in the deck, but.
I was going to say, you'll just also just get infinite tickets and be able to draft way more. Like, opening Power 9 should sustain you plenty for the format. I'm sure a bunch of people will just use that as like the gambling lottery ticket type thing. Like, my lottery ticket gave me $5 back, so I bought 5 more lottery tickets.
Sweet. And okay, and this is something that came up. It might be just a Midwest thing. Do you guys have pull tabs where you live as a way of gambling? Do you know what a pull tab is?
Yeah.
Okay. I've had some medical students who literally looked at me. We went to eat, and the restaurant / bar had a pull tab counter. They're like, what in the world are those? It's like, it's a pull tab. And they're like, I've never heard of this. So I just want to make sure this wasn't just some sort of weird Midwest thing that is in other parts of the country. Have you guys ever played a pull tab?
No, I've not played a pull tab. I don't know what a pull tab is. Can we stop talking about the damn pull tabs?
Well, it's like a lottery ticket, but combine it with opening a booster pack. So it makes it slightly more addictive. So a pull tab is about the size of a business card or a bit bigger, thicker cardboard. Most of them have three rows. And one side, they're perforated. So you basically just rip up each row and there's symbols behind that and you can win money.
It's kind of like a scratch-off tickets, Conley, but they're treated differently for some reason because convoluted, crazy local jurisdiction rules.
Yeah, you can only open them in the bar. You can't take them out of the bar, but...
All right, I would say I've learned something today, but in actuality, my brain is turning to mush. So could we move back to non-pool tab discussion?
Oh, I could talk about pool tabs all day.
I don't want to talk about pool
tabs. All day. Okay, so Vintage Masters, is there any other... I mean, there's so many cards, it's hard to pick a handful because all these cards are almost iconic in some way, so that's... It's a set of good stuff. This feels like a From the Vault made into a set.
If you sold all of your paper Magic cards and you're sitting on a pool of money and you're like, man, I wish this pool of money let me play Magic again,
or buy pull tabs.
You can buy all the Vintage Masters you want and do it online now. That's what Vintage Masters is.
So have things been doing okay with the beta client now as the official client? Or is that going to potentially terrify people about putting a lot of money into, say, Vintage Masters?
You know, I'm going to vote just to table the client discussion because that's worthy of a podcast itself somewhere down the road. We've mentioned it and talked about it before. But
now it's official. That's why I feel it's a little different now. So now you don't have a choice.
You know, it's... The client is what the client is, and it will be continuously improved. And I think everybody can agree there's lots of room for improvement.
Tom, as Kendrick Lamar once said, bitch, don't kill my vibe. That's what Adam's trying to tell you right now. He's trying to tell you we're talking about a good thing, and you got to go start talking about the new client and bringing everybody's day down. Hey, Tom, you remember your sister died?
No, because she's still alive. So suck it.
I didn't... Thank you.
You know? Have you talked to her during this cast?
Adam's getting dark.
I was not insinuating anything. Do not.
Adam goes dark.
This FBI.
If I had my water for a bouncer, which is the coolest card in this entire set, I would just return Adam to his hand. Be like, screw this.
I've had many things returned to my hand with Waterfront Bouncer. He's a good guy.
It's just the art. I don't know why the art always just...
Wait. Hang on, Tom. Me the right one. You're gonna appreciate this. So speaking of bouncers, let's touch on some travel that we've done. Let's talk about Grand Prix Minneapolis. We had a bouncer prevent underage people from entering our party.
Yeah. So Tom did not research. It ended up being a really cool spot in the end because there was a party upstairs and it was just I can't remember what the place was called anymore. The local? Was it the local?
Yeah, it was the local. Yes.
The local. So it was Yeah, Nicola Mall utterly packed, and it basically has one main floor where the bar is. Then they have this mystery room in the back that you have to reserve. Nobody is using it, but nobody could go in. Apparently it's haunted, or you just explode if you enter this room. And then upstairs, they have like a private party area, which was having a private party. That party ended and we had annoyed the staff there long enough. They just said, you guys can go up there now. But they never took down the private party sign. So it was just us.
It was just us.
It was pretty nice. I thought it was pretty slick.
I wouldn't say the entire, it was about an hour and a half at most. We weren't really that degenerate. But yeah,
Who's busting the vibe now, Vibe Buster?
We had two people that could not enter due to age, so we must apologize to those individuals.
Yeah.
Blame Tom because he has poor party planning skills. And
I have no party planning skills.
And hopefully you had fun wherever you ended up.
Blame Nicollet Mall in Minneapolis for not having something like a McDonald's or something nearby that we could have used. I mean, that would have been perfect. It'd be gross and dirty, but
McDonald's would have been perfect. Tom, well, the parent.
Open space, bathrooms, Tom, probably without syringes, minimal heroin use. Perfect. So I thought it was a good time. And Conley, I feel bad. I have not yet followed up your promise of me contacting Magic the Amateuring podcast yet. But I promise I will.
You need to, because those are good peoples.
Have you joined? I guess I haven't been following the podcast recently, but have you joined?
I have not casted with them as of yet, but that's because I've been dealing with some other stuff recently. Matt Nass got here. He's now living here. We did some streaming and stuff like that, so can't really stream and do podcasts at the same time. But I will be on their cast in the near future.
Okay, cool. That's kind of what I got. I mean, it was fun. I didn't play in the tournament. I just sold a bunch of cards.
All right.
And I brought Culver's to Adam.
That was a limited GP. What was it? That was modern. I made day two, which was good.
With a deck you found under your bed, if I remember correctly.
Yes, that is true. Basically, I sold all my cards to, I sold all my cards. We'll just say that.
And Taiwanese then, hookers. That's what he's not saying.
Yes, those damn Taiwanese hookers. I sold a bunch of my cards. Not all my cards, but all the cards are worth any money. So all the cards that mattered. And I was planning on just trying to borrow an entire Jund deck. But like then
House of Cards.
I had some bad flight issues, and I was going to. I basically didn't even get there on Friday. I got there Saturday at like 11:30 or something, like right before the third round even ended up starting, because my flight got delayed all day long and blah blah blah. It's a big mess. But anyway, underneath my bed was a fully sleeved version of eggs that I had played in the last modern GP I attended. So I kind of took that as a sign, and I just played eggs instead of trying to find a Jund deck in a half hour before my round would start. So I played that, went made day two, ended up kind of having a rocky day two where it was like 3-3 or something like that. I ended up scooping the last round to somebody who could definitely make top 32 and then or top 64. I think I wouldn't have scooped him. He could make top 32. I scooped to him and then I made top 100 anyway. And that was about it. Not that exciting of a tournament. Reasonable, but nothing fancy.
Okay. And then there's Pro Tour journey into Knicks. Is there anything there that you want to talk about or?
Not particularly. I mean, my team did fairly well. I had a good time testing for the format and the Pro Tour as a whole. We had a pretty big team this time around. We ended up playing a deck that I put a bunch of time into in Junk Constellation. We had like 12 people play it. Wesco played White Weenie, who would have thought? And then who else did not play? I don't remember. We had one other person not play it, but we had 12 people play Junk Constellation. I took 33rd. I was playing for top 16, basically, and ended up losing, which kind of sucked. But I got a few pro points out of it. I would like a couple more, but 33rd is a respectable finish. We had another teammate finish in, I think, top 16 or maybe 17th or something. But we put up a pretty good showing overall. It was a fun pro tour. I like the location. I actually dug Atlanta quite a bit. My mom lives down there, so I had quite a fun time.
Oh, that's cool.
And yeah, it was a good time. Nothing too special. The top 8 was jam packed, full of a bunch of very talented and respectable people. Patrick Chapin ended up winning, so congratulations to him. I work with him, so I've heard many times by now how he has won the pro tour.
Why? Because that's good.
Yes.
I wish that winning the Pro Tour, you got like a green jacket, like in the pro golfer tournament.
I'm very glad you don't, because we already have to hear about how champagne tastes out of the trophy basically every single day during our stand-up.
Oh, it would taste terrible. Just imagine all the cleaning chemicals and just, I don't know, probably spit. There's probably a lot of spit in there. It's like the little cup they use at church. Just cold sores immediately popping out of your mouth.
Why does everything have to get to this gross, obscene?
Cold sores are a scourge of the modern human.
Yes, they are.
It's kind of like hemorrhoids. There's only two types of people: the people that have hemorrhoids, or the people that are about to get hemorrhoids. Or if you're really old school, you just call them piles. So have you ever heard people talk about piles or talking about hemorrhoids?
Let's see.
And then you have to break down if they're internal, external, if they're painful, not painful. There's whole lot of hemorrhoid talk I could go through, but I won't.
Some things you just don't want to learn, you know?
Well, it's depending on what you do. Sometimes it can be really important. Don't tell me about your hemorrhoids. But they're bleeding. Stop it. Another silence. All right, what else do we got on here? Well, obviously we have a lot of off-topic things that we could do. Adam, is there any of these that you'd want me to go through? You seem to like the Jasper project. But I could save it for the next podcast, because we are already like an hour or something into this bad boy.
Yeah, let's save it. Tom, I see you read all the so for Grand Prix Minneapolis and for the Pro Tour, I was on coverage teams back to back. So I went from slogging through to 13-hour days to having three fairly cushy 12-hour days at the Pro Tour. But working on coverage is always really interesting, because I don't get to see all the stories going on, but I get to actually like be part of all the things moving behind the scenes, getting to do written coverage, getting to do interviews. I think it's really interesting, and I get to, every time I do it, my appreciation grows for the players and the people in the game. So while I wasn't able to watch the stream or watch, you know, Patrick Chapin win, getting to hear the stories and following that chain of events that led up to that, I always find that really interesting. It was just awesome to kind of always see it all come together from a different angle. But I was going to say, Tom, since it looks like you've gone through all of the emails, some of them are just like, hey, where are you guys?
I can read. There's a couple that I truly enjoyed.
I would just say, if you want to hit the top of the, some of the, like the best two, and let's just close that on that. Just like, we still read the email, even when we disappear for a month.
So I'm going to do three. So if you don't like that, that's too bad. So the first is from, it's LAPPEHS, so Lapis. The subject, sometimes these emails, they border on creepy, but the subject is Missy with a little smiley face emoticon. Subject, I swear to the gods, Tom, if you make me wait one more day to hear your sweet, sweet voice, I will just die. So kind of like that one. That was the entire email. Adrian St. John with a subject of, he actually emailed a few times, what the hell? Subject, last I heard, y'all were supposed to be gathering GP Minneapolis, which we did, but you disappeared from the MTG Potpourri planet. Did something happen there that was just so shocking that you couldn't go on with the podcast anymore? Did you learn something about each other that was just so repulsive that you couldn't bear to Skype with each other? Did Conley punch your sandwich? I don't know what that means. Is that like a weird sexual thing?
He's referencing Sandwich Punch, the game.
What is that?
I haven't told you about real... Sandwich. Yes, it's
yes, you told me about it. Okay, I thought it was like a video game or something. But that's why I was getting confused.
No.
Seriously, where are you guys? We're right here. So we're going to be back as of Monday, if you're listening to this, hopefully. And then last but not least, this actually came just from today or yesterday. This is from Eric W. Dear Potpourri guys, I got such a huge kick out of you guys reading my email, even though Tom almost read my email address aloud for the whole wheel to hear. Sorry. Then I decided to send another one. In the last podcast, you asked for listeners to come up with a potpourri mechanic. So here's my stab at a top-down design. Potpourri says whenever you talk about a non-magic topic, discard your hand and take an extra turn after this one. Skip your untap phase and skip your next draw phase. I would never get to play anything in a game.
You're correct.
That's I put a stasis on myself with a necropotence on top of it, but I can't draw cards for life.
What's awful about this mechanic is that it's one of those mechanics where I would totally see you, Conley, building a deck that would abuse the shit out of this. Like, you would say nothing, and then all of a sudden you just start going off on tangents as you combo off.
It'd be awesome.
Oh, because Because that would be the nut, yeah.
You just need a way to untap. You just need, like, I don't know. There's plenty of ways.
And he says, thanks for doing the show, Eric. So, Eric, we love doing the show. We are back. Because, Adam, you haven't shared a pretty big announcement. I'm amazed we made it this far without you sharing.
I'm an idiot.
Wait. Does that do with hemorrhoids?
Potentially, yes, actually. Hemorrhoids are a frequent, I'll say, byproduct of this process.
Not for the male.
Jesus!
What? I've delivered at least 200 babies, so...
This doesn't happen for the male. There's no risk of Adam getting hemorrhoids.
Litters of kittens don't count. How many, 200. You help 10 cats have a litter. Doesn't count.
So, yes. Well, I mean, theoretically, you're doing a lot of crazy stuff for the first 3 months, where I think even the guys could get hemorrhoids out of this process. But you're right. Usually for the women.
Yeah. So we have a new sapperling. Little boy,
just,
Alex.
Just don't sacrifice it for anything, please.
Well, if Gave shows up, I'm pretty screwed, aren't I?
So, I mean, sure. Boy, girl, name?
I just said his name's Alex.
It's a boy named Alex.
I was just pushing. I also wasn't listening.
Tom, you're so busy listening to yourself, thinking about the next ridiculous thing to say. You're not.
I did actually miss the things I'm saying. I miss what you said. Yeah, I apologize. So I actually was asking because I want to know.
You're a bad person, Tom.
So healthy baby boy. He was supposed to be back up to 8 pounds this week. He was like 8.5. Just chowing away, sleeps, eats, poops, does all the normal baby stuff.
Poop is such a nice term for what actually comes out of those things.
I'm trying to be nice to Conley. I can appreciate, I made a post earlier this week or late last week. So, going into this, my wife's always big on kids and she loves kids and that's great. And I knew that was part of this Faustian bargain. Like, I can get an awesome wife, but I've got to deal with making and raising children. They'd say, oh, it's different when it's your kid. Oh, you'll understand when it's your own. No, I still don't. I still don't like small children. I find them horrible and repulsive, totally, and they eject fluids constantly. And I just, it's not my bag.
Icker. I think the word icker best describes what comes out.
Yes, children ooze icker. That's they're little Phyrexians is what they are.
Yeah.
They'll infect you. It's awful. My daughter's sick. I still pick her up and hug her, and I read her, two books twice tonight and she went to sleep, and I do all the stuff I'm supposed to do, but I still kind of feel like I need to take the hottest shower of my life and scald the top layer of my skin off.
I know, so that doesn't help. It's too late now.
Right.
Like, your bone marrow is infected at this point.
Yeah.
So, I mean, congratulations.
Great. Yeah. Thank you.
Cause that first 3 months. Yeah. I'll just say good on you. Cause it's, they joke that that's basically the fourth trimester, just cause they're really not designed to really live yet. For about that first 3 months.
You can't have a fourth trimester, idiot. Jesus.
God. Comedy is totally lost on this guy. Totally lost.
But no,
how many quarters are there? Four?
You can have a third quarter, call it a third quarter, but a fourth trimester, that's
ain't going to work. It's called fractions. I don't believe in science.
You're like the state of Louisiana in the 1800s now, Tom. But before we,
it's not much different today.
Before we move on, I just want to make something.
Move on. We haven't. We're not anywhere to move anywhere. We're just floating. There's no anywhere.
I meant move on to the closing to close this out, to end the episode. We still have the end. I just want to make it super super clear. My wife is awesome. She's great at everything that needs to happen. She makes it look easy. It's really astounding.
It's not easy.
In addition,
as horrific as the experience is for me, it is still an awesome one. And I just want to give credit where credit's due. And my wife is an amazing person that makes this happen and makes the wheels of life turn, if you will.
In addition to Adam's wife being awesome, I just learned another fact about her, which is that she listens to our podcast.
How did you know this, or how did you find out?
Nobody, because he's sitting there, he's saying how awesome his wife is. She has to listen to the podcast. He's trying to get brownie points.
There's no way
he would break into a monologue about how awesome his wife is in the middle of a podcast if she doesn't listen.
See, I thought you had a sick bird come up next. How do you know?
No,
she told me last night. Boom!
I didn't think I would have to explain my joke to you, but you're just too busy thinking about the next stupid thing you're going to say again.
I thought you knew his wife somehow.
I don't know his wife.
Nobody knows my wife because she doesn't listen to the podcast. She doesn't play Magic. She's not a gamer. She went to one event with me, and that was Worlds, and that's because it was in San Francisco, and we got to walk around everywhere. Like I didn't.
She said
go
something
to
like wasting your life
for a
and that's
day because we were tourists.
We had set him off. Hi, Adam.
He must have been nice before, like all the emails come and be like,
"What did you do? Did you like kill
asshole.
Her family?
Blah blah blah."
No, and nobody's going to say you're an asshole. We all know you are a loving, caring father who just kind of hates his kids. It's fine. Yeah. Like that's what most fathers are.
It's like Louis C.K. okay. without the comedy career.
Yeah, Louis C.K., but less heartwarming.
They'll get a little bit older, and then you'll play catch with them, and it'll all be good.
Oh, yeah, I feel like we should end this before we... I don't put the pillow on their face every night.
All right, so Tom, you go first, and then I'll close out the episode.
All right, so if you want to email me to potentially learn more about the Children of the Corn movies, if you are really curious, I would recommend checking out...
Nobody.
Children of the Corn 5, it's Fields of Terror, it's 1998, is the first movie appearance of Eva Mendes. So if you want to see her first movie, Children of the Corn 5.
Here's the thing, though. I don't know if I want to see it because... I like her today, and she's probably close to 40, and she's like really, really gorgeous. And if she was in a movie in 1988, she's probably like 10 years old. And
no, she's like 18. She is. If you want to put it bluntly, she would be legal, Conley.
All right. Okay, I'll look up some photos, but I'm not watching this horrid, awful movie.
It's on Netflix streaming, so it's free to even to browse.
My time is not free.
It sounds like you've got a lot of it.
That's fair.
You're right. I'm sorry. But yeah, if you want to email me, especially if you want to learn more about the other 7 Children of the Corn movies that were made, you can email me at, I'm trying to think, TommyGustafson@gmail.com or at MTGPopery@gatheringmagic.com would also work. Or Twitter, it's PSG Reader or @MTGPopery. That's what I got for it.
Or Passage Reader.
Passage Reader? Do you know what PSG stands for? It stands for polysomnogram.
I know what we've discussed this before, but I always read it as Passage Reader.
Oh, really? Okay. That's most people probably do, and they're like, that's a stupid name, but it's mine.
Or Postal Service Greeter.
Sweet. Polish store greeter. Welcome to the Polish store.
All right. Polish needs. You can find my Twitter at @Conley81. And that's all you need to know.
That's
Channel Fireball.com, TCGPlayer.com for content. That's all I got.
And RevengeGraps.com.
I don't own that site. Don't go there.
I'm just their biggest. They're just their biggest fan.
Jesus. So I'm the_Stibs, STYBS on Twitter. Run Gathering Magic, you probably know that, so I write a couple things there. I do Command Tower every week at dailymtg.com, the mothership, if you're up for that. I also do coverage and things like that. Yeah, I think that's it.
All right.
Oh, one last thing. If anyone has made it to the end of this podcast, God
everybody did. This is where the gold happens.
But also, I'm just going to slip in a little secret teaser. There's going to be some awesome things in the works for Gen Con and Gathering Magic this year, so... Keep your eyes peeled. Get your voting fingers ready. There's going to be some goodness coming.
I vote with more than my fingers, buddy. I hope you're prepared.
I know you do, Tom. I know you do.
Got me kicked out of many, many. There's no hanging chads when I vote. Say that.
Oh, that stings. That really hurts. It really hurts.
Oh, sorry.
That's a wrap.
Couldn't ignore that one. It was just sitting there. All right, guys. Thank you, men and women, mostly men. Thank you for listening and join us within 1 to 4 weeks for the next episode of MTG Potpourri. I'm going to stop recording now.